I'm going to present this work we did at Morgan State University with some colleagues, two of whom are here, and one student who also helped us to do this presentation. This is a qualitative study and a lit review we did for Aetna, and these are the people who participated. Here with me are Dr. Alan Noonan and Dr. Kim Sidnor, who will be alternating with me in this presentation. Okay, this work was funded by Aetna over a year ago. So the slides are available online, and they are kind of busy, so we will be just summarizing some of these takeaway points, but they are in more detail if you want to download the handout. So we started out by reviewing the U.S. Surgeon General's report on culture, race, and ethnicity, and to see what changes had occurred in the last decade. So not to anybody's surprise, we saw that ethnic minorities are still subject to overt and covert discrimination regarding access to mental health services, and negative stereotyping, stigma. And as we know, minorities endure a greater burden of disease, mental health disease, not across the board, but for several conditions. So Aetna said that they have insured populations, ethnic minorities. This work was mainly done out of Baltimore, Maryland, and they have different employee populations. But even when these populations are insured, even when they have been able to go through the risk selection and the precondition, or precedence of condition, they still saw that ethnic minorities were utilizing mental health services much less than non-ethnic or than white populations. And that when minorities do access and utilize healthcare, the care they receive is not comparable than that received by white subjects with similar insurance coverage. So the objective of this work was to review the state of the art on these recommendations that were made 10 years ago and see what was new. We reviewed the body of literature, then approached some key informants, experts in the area. I'll show you the names. And then developed a semi-structured questionnaire, pilot tested with them. And we conducted the key informant interviews. We gathered information and classified it using five domains: social context, culture, access, system of care, and prevention. I'm going to talk about social context, and then Dr. Sidnor will continue. So we reviewed the literature, major reports. We reviewed the Mental Health Parity Act, the Freedom Report, it's called. And we discussed both the key informant interview text, opinions, the literature, and the literature in the consensus group to come up with the major issues. So we saw, as expected, that racial ethnic minorities are overly represented in the homeless, incarcerated, impoverished, migrant, and foster care populations, and that some of these problems are higher among ethnic minorities, although for depression and some specific conditions, that may not be the case. The main recommendations that came out of the consensus group and key informant interviews were to enhance partnerships among private and public agencies, as well as community health centers or community organizations, and Dr. Sino will provide some more detail. To acknowledge that race and ethnicity contributes independently of social socioeconomic status to limited access to mental health care services, that there is a need to support outreach by providers. We saw that in the literature, what it reports is that care is fragmented, and there is no proactive approach to these populations, and that networking with community leaders was essential. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Sidnor, please.
And you just got the number, right? Get up to you. Mm-hmm.
Okay, good afternoon. So this issue of culture was addressed through the review of the literature. And one thing I sort of want to frame this discussion when we say culture, because we use it very broadly and very loosely. And I wanted to highlight the fact that as we were going through this work, we had a considerable discussion around what culture meant, what race, ethnicity meant, what these dividing lines were about. So here we're really using culture almost as a surrogate for race and ethnicity, because I think it's fair to say that was the primary focus of our discussions, and particularly as it relates to African Americans. So I'm going to just briefly summarize the findings and then talk about some recommendations. One is that culture remains a barrier to effective behavioral health service provision, and that's both on the side of the provider as well as the client. On the client side, we talk about culture framing the perceptions of the clients in terms of what is mental health, what is illness, and what is appropriate about seeking care around those issues. And then on the provider side, we thought that it was important that cultural insight needs to be had by care providers, because it's such a big part of service delivery that if a provider doesn't have a sense of someone's, and again, I'm using culture in the air quotes thing that people hate, but if a provider doesn't have a sense of who the person is they're treating, that may well be a barrier to them delivering the most effective kind of care. So what recommendations? Then naturally out of that one comes this need to educate providers. Now we know we have the term cultural competence, and so again, training providers to be culturally competent means more than giving them one class and giving them a book and saying, and here's all you need to know about this racial or ethnic group as it relates to mental illness. It really is training them around the issues of understanding the person for whom they are delivering the service. And the other issue is tailoring services. So from what we do know, having an understanding that having a bridge between the provider and the client may be important. So here's where possibly things like community health workers may come into play, translating the knowledge between the provider and the community or the client themselves, as well as case management. If we understand about a population that it does not like going to a mental health service provider, that maybe using case management in a primary care setting may be an effective way to help address some of these cultural issues. So you can read all the other, there are more there, but I just wanted to highlight those for you. Then there's the issue of access to care. So again, we see this, bless you. We see this issue of culture webbing back into the discussion, because stigma is an issue and it's associated with views of mistrust, not just by the individual, but by these cultural groups. So the barriers are not only though cultural, they are also economic. And Dr. Velasco discussed the issue of SES and poverty and these kind of areas of converging disadvantage that play a role as well in accessing care. And it's particularly an issue as we face this volatile economic environment. Remember, we rely on insurance to provide services, for the most part, tax services. So as we move in and people move in and out of jobs, just think how hard it is for mental health services when you're not even considering what happens to primary care physicians. So you're with a physician, you lose your health insurance, you don't have insurance, that's a problem. But say you pick another one up. There's no guarantee that that provider is going to be in that same network for that new insurance pool. Just think how difficult an issue that is when you already have mistrust with the system and when the resources are already limited. So that's another barrier. And then the final big issue was that insurance does not equal access. So just because you're insured does not mean you are going to actually access services. So the recommendations we formed, and just to be clear, so we looked at these findings and the team also helped come up with these recommendations out of the review of the literature in these focus groups. So we need to know more and know better. And as a researcher, I always like that, right? We always want more research. But this is an area where we actually need to know more about these utilization patterns, treatment patterns, and what these barriers are. And more qualitative work may need to be done in understanding some of these. And then we need to reduce what we know about, so the known barriers. And some of these recommendations may include working with state agencies to expand coverage. This is an access insurance issue. Coordination of services, co-location of services. That speaks to the primary care setting as, again, a possible setting for delivering mental health services. So we say all these things very easily, but we know the problem side of that is we're putting a lot of weight on primary care physicians. So we can't just transfer this responsibility without preparing the field for that transition. So while these recommendations seem facile on their face, we have to understand the implications of doing more and recommending these things. And then already addressing these identified cultural barriers and issues that we know about. 10 minutes, okay, great. Oh. I'm going to go one down and then come back up. I want to talk about prevention and then talk about systems of care. From prevention, we know there is little having to do with prevention in terms of mental health services. And we also kind of struggle with the language of mental illness versus mental health, which are two different perspectives. But if we're talking about mental health, prevention is a secondary role, not primary. So that came through in the findings. And there's actually limited availability of kind of health education and promotion around behavioral health services. And this was an Aetna-funded project, and so they use the language of behavioral health services, not mental health services. So you may see that distinction there, but we're talking about an insurance company who, and we use the language that they use. Recommendations there are to develop culturally relevant outreach programs, and that is to understand what are the barriers and then to create a knowledge base and awareness base to kind of infiltrate based on what we've learned about cultural barriers. And the second issue is to implement the effective mental health treatment within the primary care setting. Again, we say this with caution, and I think there were those in the group who felt two ways about using physicians as a primary. And the big issue is physicians are not generally trained around these behavioral health issues more than the usual rotation. So what are you going to do when you, again, transfer this power and authority? And that brings us back up to actually systems of care. And the findings, we found that all the things we talk about we think are important, social justice, cultural competency, do not seem to be institutionalized within these systems of service delivery. So this is both the insurer and the provider as a large system of health service delivery, not just that patient-client relationship that we're talking about. The other issue is that behavioral health services are often fragmented, understaffed, and hard to reach by community. And again, for all the reasons we talked about, these are just exacerbated in current conditions. They don't help to improve these things. The other issue is that a primary issue for me is that we have begun to criminalize in many ways mental illness, and a lot of the issues that we see that are mental health related, the court's now seeing them. Drug courts, mental health court, juvenile justice court. We certainly see it in the prison system, where probably more behavioral health and mental health services are delivered in prison than are delivered outside the prison. We certainly don't want that to be the context within which minorities are primarily receiving mental health services. So this was a finding, but I think we all kind of knew it intuitively. So what are our recommendations? Number one, that institutions actually take the time out to develop a comprehensive, culturally competent system, taking all these issues into account and building them into the institution itself. So how do you do that? Well, one is a leadership issue, because at the top, if you don't set a standard that you must deliver culturally competent services, then that's not going to filter down. So a lot of these things have to be done at an administrative level, not at a provider level. The second thing is that traditional providers need to think about other partners. So particularly for minority communities, the faith-based community is one of the groups that we talked about, using churches or other places of worship to partner in delivering services, in helping in education and awareness. And unfortunately, the other good partner would be the correctional system, actually talking to the courts and the criminal justice system to discuss what's the nature of service delivery for these groups. And then the third thing is, and all the physicians, how many are physicians in here? Only a couple? Well, this is for you, to incentivize delivery of service so that to make sure the insurance that you're not getting paid the smallest dollar possible when you do deliver services within the context of your office setting. So those were kind of the primary issues we had around from the findings. And I think the issue of pharmacotherapy versus psychotherapy, because there's a difference in treatment. And I'm not sure we came to consensus around which one to recommend, but this is one of the areas, and Dr. Noonan is raising his eyebrow, this is one of the areas where I think more research needs to be done about what's the most effective treatment. You don't just say drugs versus psychotherapy without knowing what the context is, but more research to understand the distinction when these two things are appropriate. So the take-home message is this: not enough has been done around mental health and minorities since the Surgeon General's report. I think that was a big and fairly sad take-home message. While there's a lot of research, it doesn't seem to have moved us anywhere. The second take-home message is what we know needs to be translated and disseminated and facilitate uptake within the provider system. So we do know some things that people can act on. There are things that providers can do that people can do, and we need to encourage that uptake. And then the third thing is we need to understand what we don't know and research that further. Research utilization patterns, adherence patterns, belief systems, and research them not in a way from a distance. Because if we try to treat cultural groups as some large, even when we call them a cultural or racial ethnic group, as a homogeneous unit, we're going to fail to pick up some key nuances. So I think the research and understanding the nuances within group changes before we go on to actually implement practices would be critical. Thank you.
When we have time for some questions, do you want to?
You can take all the questions.
I will distribute the questions. Dr. O'Keefe.
Dr. Glasgow, did you find the Hispanic paradox in mental health?
No.
Can you repeat?
I don't think so. The question is if we found the Hispanic paradox in mental health. I don't recall having seen anything on the literature about that.
Are the statistics adequate in the Hispanic population?
No. There's there were some studies on NHANES and some other surveys. There are some prevalence data, but no. One thing that we saw here is that several of these traditional barriers may be addressed or redressed by healthcare reform. For example, the data insurance exchanges that will allow portability and some competition, but again, for cultural issues, we doubt that this may be the only mechanism, but there's also some provisions regarding culturally sensitive personnel, training, expansion of prevention services.
The
the federally qualified health clinics. So, and parity, but however, for parity, for example, which is very important, I recently searched the literature again, and I found one paper only talking about parity and not in the context of healthcare reform. I found one that basically theorizes about what may happen in healthcare reform, so parity should continue or lurching forward because it's not completely delivered. But healthcare reform seems to be the right context to overcome several of these barriers. So we were very happy to see that after 10 years of little change, the ACA may help overcome several of these barriers. And yes.
So her question had to do with minorities accessing mental health services, and that she'd done some focus group and found that minorities indeed do understand that they have issues. And this is around the children. Was this around parents? For children, which is a slightly different behavior than adults seeking for themselves. But that she found that they had patterns where they sought non-traditional places to get support and that the timing of getting it, and wanted to know whether or not we had encountered any of that. So I think primarily our discussions had to do with this notion of seeing health as a stigma, mental illness as a stigmatizing issue, one not to be discussed openly with people and certainly not discussed with people that you don't know, which would be a healthcare provider if you don't have a relationship with that person, which is why I think we had the discussion about bringing the faith community into it. So for some minority populations, the faith community is where they go help seek. It may be a minister or a pastor, somebody in church. It may be a support group, these more non-traditional people. So I think you're correct in not saying that minorities don't recognize they have mental health issues, because that would be, but what you name it and claim it and has to do with where you go seek help around it. So some of the language of not calling these mental health services, not calling them mental health services, but kind of behavioral health services is one way to try to minimize the stigma about what you get called. And the other issue is locating it in primary care settings is one way to minimize stigma, because there with your primary care physician, he doesn't have to send you to the specialist, and people don't have to know you're seeing a psychiatrist or some other person for the mental health problem. So I think it's not so much that the phenomenon is different, completely different in terms of understanding, but how do you respond to it, I think has this kind of cultural variation to it. Does that answer your question?
Sure. Okay, well, thanks to our presenter.